Hello, I'm CM Conway, the filmmaker of the witty and poignant indie, How to Successfully Fail in Hollywood, now on Prime Video, and funnyfailurefilm.com. On this now monthly podcast, we celebrate funny flubs, bodacious blunders, and miraculous missteps that happen to us as artists. So hone your funny bone and let's get started. Greetings and welcome to our show. Our podcast is inspired by our fun little flick, How to Successfully Fail in Hollywood, a humorous tale about the all too human experience of having bodacious blunders along the path to a dream. The film follows best friends Ellie and Ben and their friends Kiki and Dee Dee, who are artists trying to make it against all odds in the industry and on the path to finding their true identities in the fantastical world of Tinseltown. At times, they actually have the ability to look their failures dead in the eye and laugh. And that's what we try to do on this show. So if you're an artist and you've had a mishap that's happened in your creative journey, and you'd like to share it on the show, please visit funnyfailurefilm.com and click on Share Your Story. Today's story is an edited excerpt from Chapter 2 of Chapters of My Autobiography by Samuel Clemens, also known as the famous writer Mark Twain. Twain began writing his autobiography long before the 1906 publication, and the chapters were published in serial form in the North American Review during 1906 and 1907, when Twain was 70 years old. Twain was a humorous and divisive writer who was a reflection of his time and his beliefs. Many of his novels were made into movies, and it must be said, some of them included old tropes and depictions within his characters. Nevertheless, his works have had a significant influence on our society. In the last couple weeks of our show, we've had stories with the theme of trying to get an agent for a book or oneself. This story is also along the theme of trying to get a publication agent for a book. The story is performed by John Greenman and is a LibriVox recording in the public domain.
My experiences as an author began early in 1867. I came to New York from San Francisco in the first month of that year, and presently Charles H. Webb, whom I had known in San Francisco as a reporter on the Bulletin and afterward editor of the Californian, suggested that I publish a volume of sketches. I had but a slender reputation to publish it on, but I was charmed and excited by the suggestion and quite willing to venture it if some industrious person would save me the trouble of gathering the sketches together. I was loath to do it myself, for from the beginning of my sojourn in this world there was a persistent vacancy in me where the industry ought to be. Ought to was is better, perhaps, though the most of the authorities differ as to this. Webb said I had some reputation in the Atlantic States, but I knew quite well that it must be of a very attenuated sort. What there was of it rested upon the story of the Jumping Frog. When Artemus Ward passed through California on a lecturing tour in 1865 or 66, I told him the Jumping Frog story in San Francisco, and he asked me to write it out and send it to his publisher, Carlton, in New York, to be used in padding out a small book which Artemus had prepared for the press and which needed some more stuffing to make it big enough for the price which was to be charged for it. It reached Carlton in time, but he didn't think much of it and was not willing to go to the typesetting expense of adding it to the book. He did not put it in the wastebasket, but made Henry Clapp a present of it, and Clapp used it to help out the funeral of his dying literary journal, the Saturday Press. The Jumping Frog appeared in the last number of that paper, was the most joyous feature of the obsequies, and was at once copied in the newspapers of America and England. It certainly had a wide celebrity, and it still had it at the time that I am speaking of, but I was aware that it was only the frog that was celebrated. It wasn't I. I was still an obscurity. Webb undertook to collate the sketches. He performed this office, then handed the result to me, and I went to Carlton's establishment with it. I approached a clerk, and he bent eagerly over the counter to inquire into my needs. But when he found that I had come to sell a book and not to buy one, his temperature fell 60 degrees, and the old gold entrenchments in the roof of my mouth contracted 3/4 of an inch, and my teeth fell out. I meekly asked the privilege of a word with Mr. Carlton, and was coldly informed that he was in his private office. Discouragements and difficulties followed, but after a while I got by the frontier and entered the Holy of Holies. Ah, now I remember how I managed it. Webb had made an appointment for me with Carlton. Otherwise I never would have gotten over that frontier. Carlton rose and said brusquely and aggressively, "Well, what can I do for you?" I reminded him that I was there by appointment to offer him my book for publication. He began to swell, and went on swelling and swelling and swelling until he had reached the dimensions of a god of about the 2nd or 3rd degree. Then the fountains of his great deep were broken up, and for 2 or 3 minutes I couldn't see him for the rain. It was words, only words, but they fell so densely that they darkened the atmosphere. Finally, he made an imposing sweep with his right hand, which comprehended the whole room, and said, "Books! Look at those shelves! Every one of them is loaded with books that are waiting for publication. Do I want any more? Excuse me, I don't. Good morning." 21 years elapsed before I saw Carlton again. I was then sojourning with my family at the Schweitzerhof in Lucerne. He called on me, shook hands cordially, and said at once, without any preliminaries, "I am substantially an obscure person, but I have at least one distinction to my credit of such colossal dimensions that it entitles me to immortality. To wit, I refused a book of yours, and for this I stand without competitor as the prize ass of the 19th century. It was a most handsome apology, and I told him so, and said it was a long-delayed revenge, but was sweeter to me than any other that could be devised. Now I was pacified, appeased, happy, even jubilant, and that thenceforth I should hold him my true and valued friend. I reported my adventure to Webb, and he bravely said that not all the Carltons in the universe should defeat that book. He would publish it himself on a 10% royalty, and so he did. He brought it out in blue and gold, and made a very pretty little book of it. I think he named it The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County and Other Sketches. Price, $1.25. He made the plates and printed and bound the book through a job printing house and published it through the American News Company.
Twain's story is both witty and strikingly similar to the experience many writers have when embarking on trying to get a book published and having a meeting to try to make that dream come true. His story was published in 1906, but it's remarkable how some things never change. And thankfully, there are many exceptions to this experience as well. It also reflects the common experience writers and artists have of all the ups and downs that can happen when trying to bring a project you've created out into the world. Twain was known to embellish, and if the brusque publication agent made those comments 20 years after the meeting of making the mistake of turning down his book, well, that is a comment that many writers and artists can vicariously revel in hearing. We will continue the final part of Twain's chapter and story on next week's show. Thank you for joining us in the How to Successfully Fail in Hollywood podcast. Copyright by Showstoppers and FunnyFailureFilm.com. Intro and outro song, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star by David Mumford. Until next time, remember, mistakes makes art more interesting.